Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Friday morning. We'll have all of our regular Friday features, Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spy, You Big Dummy, all that. I think I'm going to sneeze. Thank you. So there you go. And that's all coming up. Also, Michael Osaki is going to join us. Tomorrow is Topps National Baseball Card Day. He is an expert, a sports memorabilia expert, and he's an appraiser. And if you've got some stuff around the house, sports memorabilia around the house, or baseball cards, or any of that kind of stuff, anything sports memorabilia related, he can help you out by appraising it, and he'll do that for us a little bit later on. So that's all coming up on the show right now. But we want to get to our first guest, and that is Herb Weisbaum. Herb's a consumer man. He's a consumer reporter for NBC News and KOMO in Seattle. You can see him at consumerman.com. And we have Herb on once a month. He's one of our buddies and one of our favorite guests. And here is Herb. Herb, welcome to the show.
Hi, Nick. How you doing?
I'm all right, sir. How are you?
Good. Well, listening to your opening bit, I know I only have to be good for the first 10 minutes and have a great score, and it doesn't matter what happens the rest of the
But the rest of the movie is actually great. It's just that I've never seen a horror movie open up with such intensity and insanity. So that's what I was warning. I was warning him a little bit to prepare himself. All right, Herb, tell everybody about you, as we do every month.
Well, as you said, I'm the consumer man. It's my job to look out for you and try to steer you away from the scams and to the good deals and how to save money and be smart. And I do that for NBCNews.com. I write a column a week, which I then post on my website, consumerman.com, to make it real easy for you to find. I also work at a radio station here in Seattle as their consumer reporter. So I'm basically all things consumer.
There you go. And the website is consumerman.com, as we've mentioned.
Right.
All right. Let's start out with how do you have credit card debt, and you have an article here about skipping lattes. Forget skipping lattes. Focus on areas of spending instead. And you have some advice for people on how they can better use their money.
Yeah, this was an interesting look at the subject. I think we all know that a lot of people in this country have a significant amount of credit card debt. And the folks at creditcards.com decided to look at what people spend money on, discretionary money on, who are in credit card debt as opposed to households that are free of credit card debt. They looked at 9 different discretionary spending categories and to try to find a pattern, because it turns out discretionary spending in many cases is often a significant part of the problem.
Yeah.
So finding where that is part of the solution. And the average household spends thousands of dollars a year on non-essentials. So here's what they found. They surveyed 2,500 U.S. adults, and they found that those with credit card debt spent more in each of these categories: dining and takeout, clothing and accessories, cell phone service and equipment upgrades, entertainment outside the home, fitness, subscription services, that would be like your Netflix and that kind of stuff,
right,
and personal care and beauty products. And in some of the categories, it was really significant. I was surprised, but the clothing and accessories category, a household in debt spent $1,892, so nearly $1,900, and the household that was not in debt only spent $1,500. That's a pretty sizable difference there.
Yeah.
$300 more on cell phone service than the households that weren't in debt. And the bottom line, according to the folks there, is that people always say you get into credit card debt because of an emergency or because you just can't make ends meet with day-to-day expenses. But looking at what they found, it's that a lot of people have lifestyle creep, as they call it, little extra things like dining out or entertainment or gym memberships that are busting their budget, but they don't really notice it, but it's happening over time.
Yeah.
And you have to look at that kind of stuff, and that's where you've got to cut back. Yes, it would be great to cut back a latte a day to save some money. The trend has been lately in personal finance to do what they call latte shaming. You know, skip that latte a day, and you're all of a sudden your budget's going to be in balance. And,
right,
you know, clearly saving $3 to $6 a day if you have one latte or more could actually help give you some breathing room in your budget. But if you have some sizable debt like this, it's cutting out things like this as opposed to cutting out a latte that's going to make a difference. So one person gave me an example of the Motley Fool. She said, if you spend $20 on a pasta dish at a restaurant, that you can make it $5 for yourself at home. Not a big deal if you do it once in a blue moon. It is something significant if you're doing it 2 or 3 times a week, every single week.
Yeah.
Then there's an area where you could cut back and actually put some wiggle room in your budget. That's the logic here of trying to find ways to cut back.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking to see that the people who are in debt spend more money in every category.
Except for two, with leisure travel, which was a significant difference of people with free of credit card debt felt comfortable of spending about $1,000 more in overall each year in travel, and people in credit card debt spent just a little less than people without debt for a car lease or a loan, possibly because they're having a lower price vehicle or something like that, or lower car payments. But in seven out of the nine categories, they actually did spend more, and it adds up to a big chunk of change. And the other thing that I thought was very interesting in this survey is, and that was pointed out to me, is that a lot of people wind up getting in trouble because they're being billed for a service that's automatically billed to your credit card, and many times you don't even stop to think that it's on the bill. A lot of people don't look at their bills, which to me that doesn't make sense because you need to look at it to look for fraud and make sure missed charges and just see where you're going. But if you're not looking at your bill and you sign up for something, you know, maybe you don't use that account anymore, that music account or that video account or a gym. You join gym, it's billed to your card every month, you're not gone anymore for some reason, but you never stop to look at the charge to see that's, or the clothing subscription one somebody pointed out. You know, get those boxes of clothing or cosmetics month. Those are places where if you're not looking at your bill or you're not stopping thinking about it, once you sign up and that bill keeps going on and on and on, those are, again, some things where you could actually cut them out and make a sizable difference.
Okay. Well, listen, Herb, hang on. I still want to talk more about this because you do go into more detail about how you can, you know, how you can cut back on this kind of spending and talk about, you know, making a budget and stuff like that in order to get out of that debt. Herb, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, Herb Weisbaum is with us. He's great. He's the Consumer Man. Check out consumerman.com. If you have any consumer-related questions or concerns, we're here to help out. He'd love to help you out and keep you from scamming and making smart decisions with your money and all of that consumer-related stuff. So give us a call. The phone lines are open. The text lines are open. And Herb can probably help you out. He will help you out. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. The news is coming up next. And then when we get back after that, we will jump right back into Herb, talk more about consumer issues, and answer your questions right here on 720 WGN. Right, welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Here till 5 a.m. It's Friday. All the regular Friday features are coming up. Michael Osaki is going to join us from Baseball in the Attic, and he will appraise your sports memorabilia if you have some. That's after 2. But right now, Herb Weisbaum is with us. He's our consumer man. And talking about consumer issues, let's welcome Herb back. Herb, welcome back.
Herb was talking to you from Seattle. Vic missed a big sports story.
What's the big sports story?
Seahawks won tonight.
Oh. Yeah, we normally lead with the Seattle teams here in Chicago. That's normally what we lead with. Boy. All right, Herb, welcome back. Now, we were talking about this piece that you put together based on the creditcards.com survey, and you also have some advice on how people can cut back on some of this non-essential spending and work on a budget and stuff. What are some of the things that you wrote about and detailed in the story?
Yeah, the key to getting your house in order financially is to know where the money's gone, what's coming in and what's going out. And the only way to do that is to have a budget. You know, with what we were talking about before about making some cutbacks in your budget, no one is saying that you cannot ever treat yourself to anything, that you can't go to the movies ever, or you can't dine out ever, or take an exercise class, or even buy that latte every once in a while. But if you are having trouble making ends meet and you're running up a sizable balance on your credit card, you got to figure out where you can make some trimming in that non-essential spending.
Right.
And only 40% of the American households, according to the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, have a budget. And you can't, as I said, know what's happened with your money unless you have one. So you've got to make a budget. And it doesn't have to be a sophisticated spreadsheet or anything complicated. It just has to be, here's where I'm spending my money. If you want to start, the National Foundation for Credit Counseling does have on its website a starter kit to get you help started making a budget. I link that with this story that's on my website, consumerman.com. But track where the money is going, and once you see where it's going, you may be surprised at how much you really are spending on eating out or doing certain things that maybe you could make a cutback, or you see, I do I do pay for that gym membership every month, and I'm not going to the gym. Either go to the gym and get healthy or cut the gym membership, one
right,
or the other.
Right.
So that's what, and if you're really, really struggling, and there's some people who making these cuts are what we're talking about, that just isn't going to be enough for them. They've unfortunately gotten themselves so deep into trouble, then you really need to see a nonprofit credit counselor. This is somebody who's going to talk to you, work with you one-on-one. They're going to have no judgment whatsoever about you, what you did to get you in the situation you're in. They're going to try to help get you out of that situation. Forget a lot of the ads you hear, you know, we'll fix your credit overnight, all this stuff. You want one of these nonprofit credit counselors who are looking out for you. The first consultation in most cases is free, and they'll take a look at your spending, they'll set up a budget, they'll set up a plan with you. In some cases, the monthly payment may be nothing depending on your income. Sometimes it's as little as $15 or $20, something like that. They can negotiate with your credit card companies. They can figure out what to do and help you pay off your debt a lot quicker. I've talked to people, and I'm not kidding when I say that have had $50,000 to $80,000 in credit card debt. They walked in and worked out with a credit counselor. You know, the first thing they do, Nick, is cut up your credit card so you can't use them anymore.
Right.
And within 4 years, they had whittled down that debt to zero. And the one couple I'm thinking of, they actually wound up buying a house 4 years later when they had zero credit, yeah, and $50,000, $60,000 worth of credit card debt. So it can be done. It's affordable. It's easy access. And if you're looking for one in your area and you don't know where to start, once again, that website of the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, NFCC.org, has a list of local nonprofit credit counselors in the Chicagoland area or wherever else you're listening, and that you can make an appointment, see them, and they really can make a difference in your life. There's no need to suffer. There is help out there. They can help virtually anyone, no matter how serious the problem seems to you. They've seen it all, believe me.
Now, you know, Herb, we talk about this every time we talk about credit card debt and getting out of it. I always throw in my personal story. because I got out of it, and I was, as you just said, you can get back, you can get out of it, and sometimes it takes a while. It took me a while, and I had a significant amount of debt, and it was because there was no emergency or anything. It was because of these stupid spending that I would do on the credit cards, the stuff that you that this whole piece is about, and
right.
I cut that back big time, and I got out of debt, and I'm telling you, it can be done. And also, man, and Herb, we've talked about this before, the feeling of finally being debt free is unbelievable. It's like a massive weight has been lifted off of your shoulders. It really is, and it can be done. So
yeah. I mean, I've never, thankfully, been in that situation, but I had a time once where I was juggling money and waiting because a big bill had come in and something I did around the house, and I was waiting for my income, you know, the check to come in and a freelance thing. And I know what that stress was like, and I knew the money was there and I was going to be okay. I can't imagine thinking about what it would be like if I didn't know where the money was and what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And remember, if you're only making like the minimum payment, you're never going to pay the card off.
That's true.
And you're going to be, and you're paying, you know, the average interest now, Nick, is 18% across the country. If you're in a bad credit situation, you're probably paying 22 to maybe 29 if you're in a default situation. I mean, that thing just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger unless you proactively say, I need help, I got to do something, and then somebody takes care of it for you.
Okay. Well, go to consumerman.com and definitely read all about that, what we were just talking about. You know, this comes up too, Herb, and it's an interesting. You also have a piece here called "How Young Is Too Young for a Kid to Have a Credit Card." This is a, you know, I mean, now kids have more sophisticated stuff nowadays than anybody. I mean, you know, the phones and things like that didn't exist when I was a kid, obviously. But you know, little kids now have screen time and they have phones, and how quickly will they move on to credit cards?
Well, that was a question that I found fascinating, answered by the 2019 Parents, Kids, and Money survey done by T. Rowe Price. And they found out that 17% of the kids in this country, age 8 to 14 years old, now have a credit card.
Wow.
And that is up from just 4% in 2012. So a huge jump in this. And as you know, getting a credit card, you can't get one at that age. These young people can't get one themselves, so they have to be made an authorized user on their parents' credit card account. And when I started talking about this story, my editors back in NBC New York and even family and friends I was talking to go, are you kidding me? An 8 or 10-year-old kid having that much spending power in their pocket? They thought it was absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
But I spoke to Stuart Ritter, who's one of the certified financial planners at T. Rowe Price, and he wasn't really surprised, and he certainly wasn't alarmed by the survey findings. His logic is, and other financial planners I spoke to for this story said the same thing, it's all about knowing your son or daughter and preparing them for the responsibility of having a credit card if you believe they're ready for having one. So it's less about how they're going to, you know, not the mechanics of the credit card, but actually having the responsibility of understanding how these cards work and what needs to be done to make it happen. And there are some benefits for having a card at a young age. I mean, several people I talked to told me they thought it was an emergency valve for their kid. For some reason, the one mother from here in Seattle, her kid was traveling to San Francisco on a plane by himself to visit a friend, and just wanted him to have some kind of emergency money in case something happened. Didn't want to hand him cash, wanted to have something more significant, and everything worked out just fine in that situation. They trusted their kid. They talked to him about money. Another mother I spoke to, she gave her kids credit cards, three daughters, when they were 13 years old, and she explained to them the rules. She said, this is not magic money. It doesn't come out of nowhere. You buy things with my permission that you're allowed to buy, and if you buy things so I get the bill and I'm not approving it, you're going to pay for it out of your allowance. And she said they screwed up maybe 5% of the time, and when you're young, that's maybe a time to make a mistake. But she said by the time my girls were in college, they all had a good credit history. They were all on their way when they needed to get loans or take a car loan or get an apartment when they got out of college, and it worked out well. I'm sure it doesn't work out well in every case, but let me explain the mechanics of how this works.
Sure,
this authorized
sure.
user. So what you do is you agree that you're going to let your child be on the card, and so they don't get their own card. I mean, they get a physical card with their name on it, but they actually get it's hooked up to your account. So you're the master credit card holder of the account, and you get the copy of the bill, so you see what your child is spending the money on, and you, Nick, are on the hook. So if they spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and run up the bill,
right.
You're on the hook to pay for it.
Right, right.
And they could screw up your credit score as well. So the difference is with a cosigner, which a lot of parents do when their kids get older, like in college, for a cosigner, they can actually basically do whatever they want to do, and you're responsible for it. With this one, you could shut them down at any time, and you see what they're doing. So it's got a little more peace of mind built into it that you
right.
know what your child is doing.
Right.
And all the parents I talked to and the experts said, sit down with your child and explain whatever for you is the rules of the road. Like, here's what you can spend this card on. You know, you need to ask me or you don't need to ask me. One parent said, if you know I would pay for that if we were to store, then you can pay for it. If you know I tell you you couldn't have it, you can't pay for it. And then how's it going to be paid for? Are we, the parent, going to pay for that? Or is this going to be a teaching moment? You get an allowance every month. You can't spend more than your allowance, and your allowance will go to pay for whatever you run up on the credit card bill. So if it's used in that sort of way with guidance and explanation, and the parents themselves are responsible with credit, it could be one of those teaching moments where you teach your child how to use credit. As one expert put to me, we live in a world of credit. Your kids are going to use credit sooner or later. You might as well teach them at a young age how to use it responsibly when they can really learn things. And you know, that's one of the logics. Maybe 8's too young, maybe 10's too young, but you know, maybe it's when they're teenagers, maybe it's okay, you know, they don't have to wait till they're 18 years old and head off to college or graduate from high school or something like that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, when I was a kid, I had no knowledge of what the value of money was. You know,
mm-hmm.
I had no idea. So I think one of the positives that you were just talking about was this could teach kids the value of money and what it means to spend money and to have some grasp of that at a young age.
Yeah, especially if you set the rules. Like, here's the deal. You know you're going to get $25 a week on allowance for the chores you do. So that means over the course of the month, let's say you can't spend more than $100. So keep in mind when you're charging these things, and maybe you want to have other money to do something with. You don't want to spend $100 worth. Maybe you want to save it up for something bigger. I mean, there are money concepts that could be taught here if the parent is interactive with their child, keeps track of things, and really, you know, uses this as a teaching lesson to do something like that.
Yeah. Okay, Herb, hang on, all right?
Okay.
Okay, Herb Weisbaum is with us. If you have any consumer-related questions or concerns, you need some help from Herb, he's here. He's the consumer man. The phone lines are open. The text lines are open. Get in here with your question for Herb at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. More with Herb, the consumer man, Weisbaum, after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Michael Osaki is going to join us after the 2 o'clock news. He will be coming in straight from the PPG Paints Green Room. We love the PPG Paints Green Room. Best view in the office area here. I think that room has the best view, the PPG Paints Room. Michael Osaki will be here. He's a sports memorabilia expert appraiser. And if you got some stuff laying around that you want to know what it's worth, well, he can help you out with that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number right now, though. We're talking with Herb Weisbaum. He's the consumer man. Check out consumerman.com. He's here to talk about consumer-related stories and to help you out with any concerns or questions that you have consumer-related. And it's 312-981-7200. Herb, welcome back.
I slept in that green room once when I came
yes.
to see you.
Yes, you did.
Nice couch. A very comfortable couch.
It is a very comfortable room in the PPG Paints green room. That's exactly right. When you came down to Chicago, you came over to Chicago to visit with us, and you did. Yep. You ended up taking a nap in the PPG Paints green room.
Had my first Lou Malnati's pizza and my first nap in the Pittsburgh Paint, the PPG Paint green room.
Green room, so. Exactly. All right, very cool. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We do have a text here. Maybe you can help somebody out. This is Bill. He's
sure.
He's in L.A.
Oh, hi, Bill.
I just tuned in, so maybe I missed this. Does Herb have a recommendation for how much allowance for a 13-year-old or whether they should do chores and just or get it without chores? Oh, well, now that's a parenting question more than that. But what do you think money-wise for a 13-year-old?
I don't have I don't have any kids, so I don't have a number factor, but I had an allowance when I was a kid, and I just thought it was a great way, rather than the parents just handing you money, which I know so many parents when I see around me do for kids, is to sort of teach the concept that you got to work for money. That doesn't mean you can't, the parent doesn't buy other things for you, but I think the idea of having your own little pile of money and the ability to spend it on some things that you want to, that you don't have to explain to anybody because it's your money, but you sort of learn the value of money, as you were saying, and also maybe the delayed gratification. You know, you learn that, well, if I really want that pair of pants is $50, but I only get $25 a week, you know, if I don't spend anything this week and I take next week's money, I can buy that pair of pants. It's a great way to teach those money concepts. So I'm not a parenting expert, but I think there is something to that. At least it worked for the kids. My generation was because I remember the kids, we all had allowances, and it just built into us some sense of responsibility. And I think that's really important and maybe missing in a lot of kids' lives these days where they just get handed everything.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that teaches them anything, quite frankly.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Another piece that you wrote here is the latest scam. It's a government imposter scam and getting calls from the Social Security Administration. Tell us about this latest scam.
Yeah, the imposter scam is going to be really big right now, and so that what it is in most cases it's a telephone call, and the bad guys pretend to be somebody, and with the U.S. government, it works really well. The studies have indicated, and it's borne out by what we see in real life, that people tend to react more when they're frightened than if they're rewarded. So, for instance, there's still plenty of, you know, you just won the $1 million lottery, just give us $100 kind of scams going on. But if someone calls you up and says, I'm calling from the IRS and you're going to be arrested for not paying your taxes, or I'm calling from Social Security and there's a problem with your account and we shut it down, you need to do this in order to get this month's benefits, that, Nick, really gets your attention. I mean, if you're a senior who's living on Social Security, that really gets your attention.
Yeah.
It frightens you. You know, your brain reacts in a flight mode. You what do I need to do? I've talked to people who fall into these. I just said, what do I need to do? Tell me what to do. Don't turn my Social Security benefits off. So a lot of the scams, the impersonator scams now, have shifted from the IRS, not that they're gone, but they're shifting to Social Security. I think that's because there have been so many warnings about the IRS scam, but it's also because the Social Security one just scares the daylights out of specifically seniors when they're told that there's some problem with their account and they're going to shut it down. And the other thing that sometimes makes these scams so realistic is that they are using information now from the data breaches so that they can pretend to have information on you, like they're calling from the Social Security. So, for instance, they may call and actually give you your Social Security number or the last digits of your Social Security number or know some of that information to actually make it more realistic, because what they're trying to get you to do is to send them money somehow. So, you know, that's you got to be careful of that. There's real simple rules to protect yourself, and it sounds really obvious and simple. Unfortunately, when the phone rings and they say they're going to, you know, cut your benefits off, but here's the rule, real simple. Folks, the federal government does not call you out of the blue, period. End of story. The IRS does not make contact with you via phone call. If there's a problem with your account, they send you a letter. Good old U.S. mail. The Social Security Administration does not call you out of the blue for any reason, period. End of story. If there's some sort of situation, they send you a letter through the mail. So anybody who calls up and tells you they're calling from the IRS or Medicare or Social Security and there's a problem with your account or your account's being shut down or someone's fraudulently using your account or whatever, and you've got to get us information right now, or you've got to pay us money right now, it is a scam. Hang up the phone. And I'm telling you, I talk to smart people, Nick. They fall for these things. A woman in South Carolina is in my story. She gave them $14,000 because they told her she was going to lose her benefits. And, Nick, these guys, I mean, imagine a score. It's one thing to steal a couple hundred dollars. If you're going to make $14,000 from somebody, they literally stayed on the cell phone with her while she drove to the bank to take out the money to make sure she did it. It sounds silly to us standing back, but in real time to her, this was scarier than
absolutely,
hell. The guy said, no, I'm going to wait on the phone until we get this thing settled. I'm going with you. You know, take me along with you on the cell phone so they don't let you get off the hook.
Man, these people have no soul, Herb. I mean,
they have no soul. They have no conscience. They have no soul. They'd steal money from their mother. I mean, I'm not kidding you. I've talked to one of these guys who was in one of these boiler rooms. He literally single-handedly stole $1 million. And he basically said, my job is to steal your money, and if you're dumb enough to give it to me, that's your problem, end of quote. That's how he sees the world. So, and the other thing is, Nick, the government's never going to call you out of the blue. They're never going to ask you for private information that they already have or ask you to send money. And seriously, and think about this, folks, the IRS, Social Security, Medicare, they don't take gift cards.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
You don't pay the federal government with iTunes gift cards or whatever. And that's what they sometimes get people to do, is to go and get gift cards and then give them the number off the back of the card. The government
that's
does
crazy.
Not. You buy things on the iTunes store with iTunes gift cards, but you don't pay off things to the federal government. So you just got to be really careful. Stop and think. If you're not sure, hang up the phone. Call somebody. Call your daughter. Call your son. Call the AARP fraud hotline. Call the Better Business Bureau. Call Medicare. Call Social Security. Everyone will tell you it's not us. It's a fraud. Just stop and think before you do something that's irreversible. Once you give them your number, if you're looking for data like your Social Security number, or once you send them the money or give them that number off the card, it's gone.
Yeah.
It's like gone, and there's no way to take it back, and there's no way to undo it once you realize that you've been snookered. So you got to stop and think before you do anything.
Okay, and read this article. It's available on consumerman.com. Again, Herb, tell everybody how they can get your newsletter.
Sure. Just go to consumerman.com, and you will get a pop-up window on the right-hand side. It'll say Get Herb's Free Weekly Newsletter. That's because it's free and usually once a week. And it'll keep you up to date on the stories I'm doing and also some of the other ones I'm doing for my radio station here. So you get a bunch of current consumer information that'll just keep you up to date on all the things that are going around.
All right. And so do that right now and subscribe to the newsletter. It's free.
Hey, can you ask your sports guy a memorabilia thing for me?
Sure.
I'm doing a big charity auction for the animals. You know my love for animals.
Yes.
I got a one-of-a-kind portrait done of Edgar Martinez, our beloved Edgar Martinez, who just got in the Hall of Fame, signed by Edgar that we're signing at the auction. I bet that's worth a few bucks.
Oh, okay. I'll ask him.
And if people are from Chicago on a fly on October 5th, we'll be happy to just say Nick DiGiulio sent me.
There you go. Before we go, we only got a couple of minutes here, but I do want to mention the Capital One breach.
Sure.
Because it was massive. It was absolutely massive. And I happen to have a card in my wallet that says Capital One on it right now, and I was a little concerned.
So do I.
And,
you know, it's believed to be a woman here in Seattle.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Here's the deal. There is so much of our information that has been breached in the data breaches in the last couple of years that you've probably been breached several times, whether you know it or not.
Sure.
All our information is basically floating around out there. So we have to live our lives assuming that the data is out there to protect ourselves. So how do you do that? Number one thing, freeze your credit reports at all three credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And that keeps any criminal who gets your information from opening new accounts in your name, which which is in most cases what they want to do if they're trying to commit financial fraud. So that stops them from doing it. Do it for the kids in your family. You can now block the accounts, freeze the accounts for the children in your family because they have Social Security numbers as well.
Exactly.
It's free. It does not affect your credit score. And if you want to take the freeze off, so you want to buy something, get a loan, whatever, you do it online, and it's usually off in 30 minutes. So it's become, in the last year, a really simple, easy thing to do, and most people still don't do it. Then keep an eye on your accounts. Look for any problem that might show up, because the sooner you find a suspicious charge, the easier it is to deal with it. Credit card, there's no real thing to worry about because you're using the bank's money. If there is a fraudulent transaction, you contact them, and they take it off your bill.
Right.
Final thing, set up fraud alerts. You can get fraud alerts on your credit card, on your debit card, on some other financial accounts. You go online, look for security alerts. Usually takes you a minute to set them up. So on my card, I have international transaction. I have money taken out of an ATM. I have any transaction over a certain amount. You can do that on your checking account too, by the way.
Yeah.
This will let you know by text or email in real time what is happening to your financial accounts and can help you spot a problem right away. Those are some of the best things we can do in this world of ours where all of our data is floating around out there.
I couldn't believe that story. Over 100 million people. That's just...
Yeah, we don't know how much you actually put out, but it certainly gives you an indication of, again, how vulnerable these systems are and how supposedly companies that are warned about a problem don't take the steps that are necessary to prevent the problem. It really is getting to be a little bit frustrating that we're giving you our data or whatever and you're not being careful enough with it.
I immediately, when I heard the story, I immediately freaked out because, like I said, I have I have a Capital One card in my wallet right now.
Right. So. You should have called me. You got my number.
Exactly. All right, Herb, always a pleasure, my friend, and we'll talk to you next month.
Thank you, Nick. You be well, okay?
All right, buddy. Take care. We love Herb. Herb Weisbaum. He's a consumer man. Check out consumerman.com and subscribe to his newsletter.